Okay, I usually try and record the lecture so that you can go back if you want. It's not so that you don't attend class, okay? So. But I do try and do that. I also try and take pictures of the whiteboard so that you can, don't have to take notes if you, having a hard time understanding what's going on. You can drop your pencil, at least that's what I always did. And then I'd end up at the end of class with no notes, and at least I kind of understood what went on in class, but it all disappeared when he wiped it off the board, and I was like, oh dear. But anyway. Well, this is the beginning of a quarter, so I thought maybe we should start out with at least a prayer and ask the good Lord to be with us and guide us in this new quarter and all the interesting things we'll be doing this quarter. So, time out. Kind Father in Heaven, thank you for being with us over this break and for the good times that we had over break. And thank you for the sunshine today and for the new classes that we can begin and the new interesting things we can learn. Lord, please help us to use this stuff that we learn in these classes for you. And thank you for being so good to us and for all the blessings we enjoy. We pray in your name. Amen. So, this is Engineering Electronics. This is the first quarter of Engineering Electronics. And in this class, we learn, well, the basics about how to use transistors and diodes and the very basic semiconductor building blocks. And we also learn some very important ideas that are concepts that you will use on not just electronics, but in other areas as well. And probably the most important one of those is how to deal with nonlinear devices. And the reason that's important is because we have a lot of nonlinear devices that we'd like to use. And electronics, has a plethora of them. So you have to really have to understand how to use them to do electronics. And, up to this point, you've taken a lot of classes that had to do with linear circuits. Like there was circuit analysis, that was all about linear circuits. Then you took a class in network analysis, linear network analysis, that was all linear stuff. And you took a class in linear algebra, and that was all linear stuff. And, some of you guys have taken a class in signals and systems, and the rest of you will, which is all about linear things. And and you begin to think everything's linear, right? And the reason you do all these linear things is because if it isn't linear, we're kind of stumped. I mean, in order to actually to make things easy enough to understand, we tend to use that crutch just all the time, okay? And so now we're going to have to figure out what we do with nonlinear stuff. And you might not be surprised to find out that we do our best with whatever we can to turn it into a linear thing. So, you'll learn how to do that, and that is a very, very important kind of a thing. The other thing you're going to find out in electronics is something that it took me quite a while to get used to and to really, by now I actually love this, okay? But when I was in your shoes, let me tell you, it disturbed me greatly. And I didn't like it at all. And that is, it's not bad to use approximations. I mean, in fact, it's wonderful to use approximations. In fact, you should get really good at using approximations. In fact, approximations are your buddy, and there's nothing wrong with being not exactly right. As long as you're kind of mostly right. And that, that used to drive me nuts. I liked classes that were elegant and you worked everything out exactly and you had the real answer. And electronics didn't fit that bill. And so You know, there were when I took electronics, there were some things that really kind of bothered me about it. But the good thing about electronics is that once you get good at it, you know, you can do some cool things. And it's the fundamental basic building block for hardware kind of engineering, you know, both analog and digital. And so it's kind of fun. You can do some cool things. This class, we in the lab, which is on Thursday afternoons, we're going to do a series of labs where each lab pretty much you'll design something, okay? And then you'll design it, build it, and test it. The next quarter in electronics, we usually do a project, which is, the whole quarter is one big, design project. And, that's even more fun in some ways because then you end up with something that's cool at the end, you know, and that's kind of fun. But, and also the thing that we all like about it is that there's only one big write-up, and that's, for the whole lab, right, for the whole quarter. It's not like one lab write-up every week, which unfortunately there are a number of lab write-ups for this class. But you have to learn how to do lab write-ups, and it used to be that you learned how to do lab write-ups in circuit analysis. But as time has gone on, that's kind of dropped by the wayside, and what they've been doing in circuit analysis these days is you fill in the blank kind of lab, you know. And so one of the things that you really need to learn how to do, which will be extremely valuable to you in the future, is writing up your design, your project, your work, because that's really the end product of an engineer. An engineer, the end product isn't a prototype or whatever, it's the documentation for a design. And so that's something that's very, very important, and we need to make sure that you get that. And so like I say, you used to get that in circuit analysis, but not nowadays. It's kind of migrated into electronics one for at least the double E's and computer engineer people. And so that's the other reason that we have to do these lab write-ups. Now, when you do a lab write-up, one of the things that I hold open for you is as long as as it's still before the lab write-up is due, you can bring the lab write-up, whatever you've done, by my office, anytime, just come find me wherever, and I will sit down and read your lab write-up, and I will tell you, here, this is what I'd fix this, do this, this, and this, this is where I'd zap you on points, and here's what you can do to improve it. And you can do that as many times as you like, before it's due, and then you turn it in, and if you've been through a couple iterations of that, there's no reason you shouldn't get a really good grade on your lab write-up, So, leave yourself a little bit of time. Don't budget to get your lab write-up done, just before lab the next week. So, and then, people always wonder about grades and stuff on the syllabus. It has that kind of stuff. There's 25% of the class is the lab, so I just count 25% for the lab. And then there are two exams, and I think those are like 15% per hour. And then there's the final exam. So since that's 2 hours, I make that 30%. And then there's like 15% left for homework or something. So that's kind of how that boils down. And I don't generally have regular, posted office hours or whatever, but I'm almost always available, Generally, I'll come in here just before class at 9 o'clock in the morning, and I'll be here till 5 or 6 in the evening. So, you should be able to find me. And if you can't, you got my number here. I'm glad to help you over the phone at home or, at school if you're somewhere else. And my email works pretty well, too. You can send me an email. I'm on the computer a lot and tend to check my email pretty often, so if you send me an email, that will probably be the fastest way to get a hold of me. I'm not as quite as connected as the rest of you guys with all your texts and stuff. instantly answering texts, but you know, at least I'm on email pretty good. So trying to think, are there other questions about the class? Okay, well then maybe what we ought to do is we ought to start off with the stuff we need to do for today. And basically we're going to look at linear two-port models. And so that's about like, that's like one of these kind of gadgets. This is like, in fact, what we're going to be looking at is, you might think of as like your, you know, one channel of your stereo amplifier as an input and an output. And amplifiers, by the way, are something very important because we end up generally having, you know, any kind of a gadget starts out with some kind of an analog signal, and you take that signal and you convert it into an analog voltage, okay? And then when it's an analog voltage, it's usually not the right level. So you either need to make it bigger, in which case you need an amplifier, or you need to make it smaller, in which case you need an attenuator. And so those kind of devices have two ports, an input port over here and an output port over here. We usually do it, you know, the way we read. Doesn't have to be that way, but that's what we usually do. And so amplifiers, which are, you know, we're going to spend quite a bit of time on doing amplifiers. They're pretty useful. And often, you know, if you're nowadays, you'll run it into an amplifier, and then after the amplifier, you might do an analog to digital conversion on it, and then you do a bunch of signal processing in it on the computer, and then you run it back out to a digital to analog converter, and then maybe you need to run it into an amplifier after that to go to a speaker or to, you know, some other device, right? So, you know, those are very important on the input and the output. So we want to look at these two-port models a little bit and come up with some linear circuit models for them. Because like I said, you know, the stuff we're going to be working with is going to be non-linear, but we're going to do everything we can to make it linear, so we need to understand the linear stuff first. So there are four different kinds of ways we can look at this two port, and each one of them is thought of as an amplifier. So I'll do the first one here, which will be a voltage amplifier. And basically, what we want to do is we want to make the circuit model for what goes into this two port here, with the input here and the output here. And the input, you know, you're going to have two wires going in. And generally the input is thought of as something that's passive. In other words, it's not something that's going to be, there's going to be, you know, if you look on here with your voltmeter, you're not going to see anything, right? And so in the linear circuit model, there's like only one kind of thing you could put in there, and that would be like an input impedance or something, right? Does that make sense? So, you know, it basically would be something like this. Zi, okay. And then this is a voltage amplifier, so really we'd have an input voltage here, Vi. And I could put a bar on it indicating that that's a phaser thing. In general, you could also write a little v sub little I, and that would be just, you know, an input voltage as a function of time. This I'm thinking of in the frequency domain because I've got an input impedance here, right? And since it's a voltage amplifier, there's going to be a voltage output out here, right? So this is going to be the output voltage here. And that would come from some kind of a generator that would make this, right? And so what kind of a circuit do we know that, you know, has an output voltage and kind of a general thing for a two-port? You know, if we're just looking at this side right here, like if I put like 1 volt on here, then this should look like what? Do you remember? And back in circuits. But any time you had, you know, in a linear circuit, this is a linear thing, right? And there were two wires sticking out, you could model that as what? Say again? Well, it could be an open circuit, but that's only works for an open circuit. What if it was a short circuit or something in between? I mean, Thevenin, that's it, yes. Thevenin. Any circuit we could model as its Thevenin equivalent, right? And instead of making a round source here, what we want to do is we want to make a voltage source here, which is some number AV times VI, okay? And this AV could be, even a complex number if you wanted to. And then, you know, this Thevenin impedance here, we actually call it ZO for the output impedance. Or sometimes, you know, these guys, you know, if it's a simple kind of a circuit and we're not really worried about frequency response, we're kind of assuming, you know, the frequency response is flat and whatnot, this would just be a RI, a resistor, right? And this would be an RO, output resistance, okay? So this is the the model for the two port, and you know you can kind of see that that this guy right here is a general thing for any one port here, and this A gives us a coupling back to the input here, so it gives me the kind of like the open circuit voltage gain. If I put VI here, and I have an open circuit on the end out here, I'm going to get AVI, right? So, right, you know, AV is defined as the open circuit voltage gain. And RI, I was going to say RI, I guess I should say ZI. VI is the input impedance. And ZO is the output impedance. And I guess those are all the parameters we had, you know. I mean, VI is obviously the input voltage, and VL is the output voltage. So this is the model we use when we're thinking about a voltage. Voltage in and voltage out. But sometimes voltage is not the thing that actually contains the information we're really worried about. Sometimes maybe a current would be the thing we were worried about. Like, for example, you might not have thought of this, but let's think about a loudspeaker. You know, some of you guys probably like stereos type hi-fi things. I mean, I did when I was little, and I guess I still kind of do. And you look at a loudspeaker. A loudspeaker's got a coil of wire in there. And then there's a magnet, and it moves this cone of paper back and forth, you know, puts a force on that cone of paper, which, you know, causes a pressure wave, and that's the thing you hear, right? So if you think about that, back from principles of physics, I don't know whether you guys can remember that, but probably, you remember this thing, the force, F equals IL cross B, do you remember that? IL cross B, that's the force. So, you know, you got the IL going along like this, you know, and the B field, right? And it's making a force this way, right? So IL cross B is making this speaker go in and out. And so ideally, would you like to drive a speaker with a current or a voltage? A current. See, the problem is, you see, that speaker, the current and the voltage would be proportional to one another if that speaker was a linear device. But it's not a linear device. Because you see what happens when you put a current through that coil, okay? What it does is it makes its own B field, okay? And that B field, of course, there's, you know, some iron in there. And what happens is that B field makes aligns all the little polar orbits and all the spins of the electrons, tries to align them so it, you know, goes in the same direction as the B field that you're applying, the applied B field. That's why, you know, when you're thinking back in principles of physics, you had this thing, B equals mu H, right? And the B field got bigger if you had mu for iron. That was a really big mu, right? Basically, it's because all there's all these little orbits that you can all tweak around, and you can make them all point that way, right? But what happens to that if you, it's not a linear kind of a thing, because if you double the current, that'll double the H field, no problem. But once all those little orbits are aligned, there's no way you're going to align anymore. They're all already aligned, right? So you pretty much what they call saturated the core, okay? And in which case, you know, putting in more current doesn't give you more B field, you know? And so, you know, there's some nonlinear stuff going on in there with the iron and the whatnot in the speaker. And so if you look at the impedance of the speaker, you will notice that it's not nice, okay? And you know, I don't know if you guys have been around long enough to notice this, but, you know, in the older stereos, you know, the ones when I was young, they would have, and maybe even some of the ones nowadays, they would, you know, have an amplifier, and you bought speakers separately, and you connected them by a wire, right? And those stereo amplifiers were essentially voltage amplifiers. You know, you take the input voltage and the output voltage, you know, and, you know, they would take a resistor, put a resistor on the end here, you know, and they would measure, you know, the frequency response and whatever. And it was beautiful with the resistor on there, right? But then, you know, they would put their speaker on there, you know, their wires, and they did it that way because, well, you know, when you have a current source, if you break the wire, you get a really big voltage there, right? So, you know, it would be kind of nice to have your if it's going to be a current source, you don't want it so you can disconnect the speaker, right? And so anyway, they would do this, and then when they put the speaker on there, which was a nonlinear device, then they ended up with, you know, not so good things. And of course, people always said, and it's still kind of true, that the speaker was the weak link, and it still is. But, you know, then somewhere around, I don't know when it was, but, you know, probably the 80s, you know, when in the 90s, you know, when computer kind of stuff started to happening, they came out with these things, like, you remember these computer speakers that you'd plug in, and the whole speaker and whatnot, and the amplifiers all built into the same little unit. And, you know, to me, it was really quite amazing. Because when I grew up, they said in order to have a good-sounding stereo, you needed a speaker about the size of the guy, right? I mean, you know, great big thing, right? And, you know, you can... And there was something to that, okay? But these little speakers like this, you know, sounded almost as good as those really big ones. And the trick was they were driving it with a current. Okay, so if we're thinking about voltage, this is kind of the way to think about it, but what if we wanted a current amplifier? And I mean, I suppose we could start out with a voltage input and have a current output. That would be, that would be a transconductance amplifier. So let's look at that. That would be B, we'll call it transconductance amplifier. So that would look like this. So I've got an input impedance here with an input voltage. And then I need a current source output. So, you know, over here we had this Thevenin circuit. What might I put over here to make it if I was trying to think of current as an output instead of a voltage? Yeah, Norton circuit. Yeah, that's right.
a Norton circuit. So that would be something like this. And we still have an output impedance here, which would be the Z Norton. I'll call this Z out. And so this is the kind of thing, you know, and they put on their speaker right on there, and so they'd be driving it with a current, right? And ideally, over here, ideally a voltage amplifier, what would you want the input resistance to be, or input impedance to be here if you wanted a really, like a perfect voltage amplifier? What would be the best input resistance to have? Well, if you had zero, then VI would be zero, right? So that's not a very good thing, because then Vout would always be zero. This would be a kind of a useless device, right? So zero is like a horrible thing to have, right? So what might we like if we could pick? Infinite. If we picked infinite, then when we hook this up to some source, right, it could have a very high source resistance. You know, I mean, if I put this, hook this onto a source like this, and if this source, RS, and this is VS here, if the RS was very, very large, if this guy was infinite, I would still measure VI equal VS, right? Which would be good. And that's why when you're making a, you know, when you're making a multimeter or something, you want, you know, very high input resistance, like 10 megohms usually they do. They actually usually make it exactly, you know, try and make it exactly 10 megohms so that if, you know, for most things, you know, your RS is going to be much less than 10 megohms and you just read the thing, right? But if your RS is, you know, if it's something else, at least you know what this is and you can calculate what the loss is here, right? Well, then on the output over here, what would be the perfect output impedance for this voltage amplifier?
Zero.
Because if we had zero, then there would be, you know, when I put a load resistor on here, there would be no loading effect, right? So then V out would be the same when I had the load or when I didn't have the load, right? Or if the load resistor was infinite or very, very small, right? So, you know, you can see that's what you'd want over there. And you know, over here, when they're thinking about the speakers, you know, if they put the speakers on here, you know, you put a load on here, the speaker is not a linear thing. But if I put a load on here, an RL, in this case, this thing would be, I'll use the letter G times VI. Okay, G as units of transconductance. You see, voltage times, G, V times conductance, voltage times conductance gives you current, right? Conductance is like 1 over resistance, V times 1 over R equals time, right? Okay, so I'm going to call this G here. This guy A was unitless, right here. A is volts per volt. This guy right here is amps per volt, right? Okay. So in this case, what would we like for, well, let's look at, ideally, what would we like for ZI, you know, your input resistance, what would you want here? Infinity again, right? Because it's basically the same situation as you've got over here, right? Okay, but what would we like for Z out here in our situation here? You know, here's the output quantity, I out here, and here's the input quantity. What would we like Z out to be? Infinity, right? So, you know, there's something different about this one and this one, and when we're thinking about we want current, we want that guy really, really large, the Z out, right? Over here, the Z out, even though this Norton thing and that Thevenin thing are the same, right? We want this guy to be zero, right? And of course, you see, if this guy is zero right here, the output current is zero, right? Because it's a current divider, with all of it going right through the output impedance, right? But, you know, if you look at over here, if Z out if Z out was infinity here, that's kind of like the opposite case. You know, we'd really like Z out to be zero. If Z out was infinity, V out would be zero, right? Okay, so I guess, you know, I can... right here, G is called the transconductance. And those are still the same. Input and output impedances are still the same. I suppose we should write, ideally, Vi goes to infinity and Zo goes to zero. And ideally over here, Zi goes to infinity, Z out goes to infinity. Okay, so that's two of them. Let's look at the next one. C would be, might as well do a current amplifier. And that's just, if we're going to send the input quantity instead of being Vi, will be Ii. So that will look like this. We still have an input impedance here. The input quantity is Ii. And then we're going to have, it's a current amplifier, so it'll have a current output just like this guy. And an output impedance, Norton impedance here. And this is the output current, I out. Now you put the load resistor on here. One thing that's handy here on this, I'll call this AI. This has units of amps per amp. One thing that's handy on the on these kind of things is whenever you're thinking about a current amplifier, the output current is whatever goes through your load resistor. Okay, so you really kind of need to draw your load resistor on there so that you can see it and where it's going. So this is a current amplifier, and I guess we could ask, what is ideally, what do we want? Ideally what? What's the Zi going to be? Zi goes to what? Infinity? Somebody say infinity? Zero, right? We want Zi, want this to be zero, because, you see, we're really going to be driving this with some kind of a, maybe I move this up as current, right? I. So if I drive this, I'm going to be driving this with some kind of a current source, which has a Norton resistance like this. And I want all the current to go into the Zi, so regardless of what the RS is, if I make Zi zero, then it'll just go around like that. And this is kind of like, you know, you can think about your ammeter. What do you want your ammeter input resistance to look like? You know, you're going to put your ammeter in series with some wire, right? You're going to clip the wire, stick the ammeter in, you know, solder it in there, and then you're going to have the current going through the ammeter, and you don't want the current to be any different than before you clip the wire, right? And what was the resistance then? It was nothing, right? I mean, wire is supposed to be zero, right? So that's what we're saying here, or over here, right? So what about the output resistance? Z out goes to what? Yeah, infinity. So it's just like that one up there, right? And then the last one would be, what's the last amplifier? What would we call that? It's a trans one. Trans what? Trans, it's going to be, let's see, what are we going to have? We're going to have current on the input and voltage on the output, right? So we call this guy transconductance, right? What would we call this guy? Transresistance, right? Because it's 1 over conductance. I mean, this is Vn, I out. This is going to be In, V out, right? I times resistance gives me voltage, right? V equals IR, right? Okay. So this is transresistance. Okay, amplifier. And we've got, let's see, current input, right? But it's still going to be the same old thing. Everything's always the same on the input. But here, the thing coming in is current, so we'll put II here. And if you want, we can put a source on here. This is the source resistance. And then over here, we want voltage. Oops.
Oh, I've been doing impedances instead of just resistances. In most cases, for these impedances, we just put in resistors and think about it that way, but, you know, sometimes you're doing things at higher frequencies, and so. And then, of course, we got the load resistor. If you want, the load resistor is not part of the amplifier. It's only, you know, this part right here is the amplifier. And this guy would be R times II. And R is the trans resistance. Oops, trans resistance. And let's see, it's the kind of an open circuit kind of a thing. Open circuit trans resistance as units of ohms. Does that make sense? Okay. So those are the four basic types of amplifiers, and we use them in, like I was saying, in different situations. You know, if you have an input voltage and you need to magnify that input voltage, you would think of this kind of an amplifier. But, you know, you can take this kind of an amplifier and you can model it with any of these types, right? Because, you know you can make a Thevenin into a Norton, right? So, in reality, there's no difference between any of them, right? It's just the ideal things. If you want to make a circuit that takes an input voltage and gives you an output voltage, it's more handy to think in terms of this model. And in general, if somebody gives me an amplifier and they don't tell me what they're thinking of, I'll kind of look at these things, the input and output resistance, and I'll say to myself, well, look, that's a really high input resistance and a really low output resistance. I'm thinking of that as a voltage amplifier, okay? And if it was a high input resistance and a high output resistance, then I think of, you know, transconductance. So I suppose we ought to finish this off and say, ideally, what's the case here? Yeah, ZI goes to zero. Z out goes to zero. Good thing. So if you're in the situation where you have an input voltage and you want an output current, like maybe you're designing the output stage that's going to drive a speaker, you know, and you have this all in one box, so that, you know, this is always connected to the speaker, so you don't have this problem of, you know, infinite voltage there. In reality, when we actually design something that puts out a current, that there is a physical limit that happens, and in most cases, you know, the voltage will not get, you know, go on beyond this physical limit. There'll be some limit, you know. If you open this thing up, it'll just go to the maximum voltage and it'll stop there. Okay, it's not like it, in this model, if I pulled this guy off here, right, and the Z out was ideal here, right, then I would have, if there was any input voltage, I would have an infinite, you know, voltage right here and electrocute everybody in miles around, right? And so, you know, ideally, that's what it says will happen, but this is a linear model, an ideal model, and of course, this is in real life, that doesn't happen. There are nonlinear effects, and the nonlinear effects make it so that, you know, you're safe in this case. But in other cases, they're kind of a pain in the neck. But in general, you know, they make things more safe. So, let's see. The next topic we need to talk about is nonlinearity, and that causes a thing called distortion here in the syllabus. If you look at that, that's what we'll be looking at next day. It's an interesting thing, and I want to take pictures here and then I can kind of at least start on that.
These phones are really handy for some stuff. And I found that, you know, taking pictures of stuff like, you know, class notes is really great. Okay, let me show you what happens when you have a nonlinear amplifier. Okay, now I'm gonna dispense with the Z's here. I'm just gonna think about everything in terms of resistance. Okay, that makes it easier. And I've got a little diagram here. Here is the input voltage Vi, and here is the output voltage Vout. This is a voltage amplifier. And you can even think of it as an ideal voltage amplifier if you want, with an infinite input resistance, zero output resistance, that'd be fine. I'm just kind of looking at this thing right here. This is a linear thing. It says AV times VI is Vout. And if you look at that, you know, that's going to look like the linear thing. This is linear. Vout equals AV VI. And that's going to look something like this. Now, and it just keeps going forever, right? Like that. Well, the problem we're going to have in real life is you're going to be running your device on some voltage, some batteries or something, right? Maybe you've got a couple 9-volt batteries, so you can go maybe plus and minus 9 volts, right? So what happens in the nonlinear thing, it looks like this. And I can't write it quite so easily as that. It's going to look kind of like this. Like that. And this will probably be your power supply voltage right here, you know. I call that VEE or something, because the, you know, it's usually the emitter power supply, and this would be a VCC or something, the positive power supply. But anyway, you know, there's your power supply, and you can't get anything more than you know. It's kind of like what our electronic devices are. They're a little, kind of like a little guy in there, and he says, okay, I can kind of adjust the level to anything between my bottom C and my top C. He has two reservoirs there, right? You know, there's one up at 100 feet, some water up there, and some water down at minus 100 feet. And, you know, you tell him a signal, and he can make the output anywhere between that top 100 feet and the other one. It's kind of like, you know, the locks, right, and the dam. You just kind of adjust it, you know, pours water from there into here and gets it to whatever you say, right? And but he can't make it go above 100 feet, and he can't make it go below 100 to minus 100 feet, right? So he's kind of stuck in between, and that's kind of how this works. And this is nonlinear, you know. You can't say that this black line is, you know, V out equals A V times V I, right? And so next day, what we're going to do is we'll look at this this nonlinear business right here. And you guys have learned some things back in calculus, you know, remember from Taylor theories things. And so we'll kind of look at that, and we can kind of classify the distortion that occurs because of this effect here, okay? And we'll look at what happens when you put a sine wave in, and, you know, what comes out, you know, and we'll see, you know, some kind of distortion properties, things that happen. Nonlinearity essentially causes distortion because, you see, the output is not proportional to the input anymore, right? And so we call that distortion in an amplifier. It's not, I mean, ideally, we just want the output to be a bigger picture of the input, just exactly the same, and unfortunately, this kind of problem doesn't quite work all the time. And then we'll look at some things called op-amps, which are, you know, actually little electronic circuits, which by the end of the quarter you should be able to design your own op-amp, but we'll start out using other people's op-amps because, you see, we need to know how to use them as well as design them, right? So we'll do some stuff with op-amps, and then, you know, as time goes on, by the end of the quarter you should be able to design your own op-amp. But, you know, at the beginning, we need to know how to use them. And even the ambies need to know how to use the op-amps, you know. They're designed to be easy to use and just work, right? And we all need those kind of things sometimes. So anyway, have a good day, and we'll see you on Wednesday. If you have any problems on the homework, come and find me.